Subset F, this is consideration of zoning amendment from parkland to medium density residential housing. I'll turn it back over to you, Mr. Smith.
Thank you. Here's a brief overview of this. I'll try and keep this on point. The city of Sturgis has applied for a zoning amendment to rezone the property in the newly New Creekside subdivision. Lots 1 through 4 will be rezoned from parkland to medium density residential housing. Lot 5 currently is set to be rezoned to RV park or campground. This is within the boundaries of the tax increment district number 15. It was created in 2018 to subsidize the sale price of housing. The TIF funds provided additional infrastructure improvements such as sewer, water, and stormwater upgrades to that area. Lot 1 through 4 will be developed for single-family housing. Lot 5 to be surplused and possibly sold to a neighboring property. Lot 5 is in the 100-year floodplain. There's a layout of the lots as they existed. Oops. Any questions on that? The use of the city-owned property is continuously analyzed for the highest possible use. At times, this includes leasing or surplusing underutilized city property. The city looks to infill underutilized property, in this case, to respond to the demand for workforce housing of under $200,000. Developing vacant land surrounded by development provides improvements that are also beneficial to the existing property owners. In 2015, the City Council continued a long-term goal of enhancing government efficiency, including surplusing and repurposing underutilized land that was owned by the city, allows for additional funds to enhance the existing parks, and allow for efficient maintenance of land. Several projects included as part of these were included as part of the capital improvement plan. Recent improvements that were made to that area, the area west of the community center, the park was put in. There's a shaded park facility that was installed in 2018. West Woodland Drive, the road was widened and realigned, and a bike path put in. That was in 2018. The 9th Street Bridge, which is currently under construction, should be completed mid-2019. And 6th Street, stormwater upgrades, additional paving, upgraded water line, and that was will be completed in mid-2019. All these improvements were funded by the TIF proceeds. These are some of the benefits for 6th Street. The city added storm sewer. The city will add curb and gutter to that area. City will asphalt 6th Street. The city water line upgraded from a 4-inch to a 6-inch. All this at a cost of $63,300 for these upgrades. None of these costs were paid or will be paid by the surrounding property owners. There is a picture of the improvements, the extra storm sewer, the new asphalt that will be put in. The lot there, which says lot now has been sewer and water, has added. That did not have city services to it, and now it does. In a 2014, city did a housing study, determined a significant need for all types of housing, including owner-occupied workforce housing priced $200,000 or lower. Although development in the city of Sturgis has increased, there's a shortage of workforce housing. City-owned land on West Woodland Drive was identified as an area for potential development to build 4 single-family homes that will match the nature of the surrounding development. There's a rendering of what one of the homes will look like with the 2-car garage from the front. This is the left elevation. That will be the side that the garage would be on. It's not attached at this time. And the right side, that should be right and left on the other side. And there's the layout for these homes that will be placed there, 1,200 square feet. There is a picture of one that was in place without a garage. The ones we would be doing will have some rock facade on the front, a little bit of extra accents. The South Dakota Housing Authority requirements for these homes, it's an adjusted gross household income to not exceed $49,910 for a household of 2 or less. This is 70% of the state median income, or $57,040 for a household of 3 or more. That's 80% of the state median income. Must be one and only place of residence, one purchased per lifetime. There's a limitation of the total net worth and liquid assets that the purchaser can have. Penalty of $5,000 is payable to the South Dakota Housing Authority if rented within 3 years of the purchase. They cannot borrow against the equity of the home within 3 years of the occupancy. They can't get a second mortgage. If sold within 3 years, the owner shall pay SDHDA the amount of equal to the difference between the purchase price plus documented improvements and the sale price. If the homes are rented to another individual within 10 years, any rental of the house must be to tenants whose income is no more than 60% of the current state median income. Restrictive covenants will be filed with the Register of Deeds. This is the proposed site layout of the homes. The rezoning amendment of the rezoning of the property can commence that the property is surveyed and plat has been approved. Lots 1 through 4, again, will be rezoned to medium-density residential housing. Lot 5 proposed to be rezoned as RV park campground. Requested zones are contiguous to the existing zones to the east and west. Lot 5 is not intended for development, again, because it's within the 100-year floodplain. Lots 1 through 4 to be developed to meet some workforce housing needs in the community. And there we'll show that the contiguing residential development, and then Lot 5 again, possibly for RV park. Here's the public meetings prior to this commencement of this project. August 23 of 2017, the Park Board discussion on the capital improvement schedule. March 2018, the city SIP, Sturgis Information Publication, newsletter, and the TIF was created at that time. April 2nd of 2018, the City Council agenda considered bids for the Woodland Drive and 7th Street project. April 4th, 2018, the Park Board discussion on Community Center Park and repurposing of the public land. April 16th of 2018, the City Council agenda approving the creation of TIF number 15 for the Creekside development and project plat. November 7th of 2018, Park Board discussion on Community Center Park and Woodland Drive property. November 19th of 2018, the City Council agenda approved the bids for the improvements on 6th Street. November 28th, 2018, a town hall meeting was held at the Community Center. April 2019, the City SIP newsletter on the rezoning amendment was put out. May 7th of 2019, the Planning Commission meeting to consider the zoning amendment. Here's the notification zone where we sent out notifications of the rezoning and got responses. This shows the FEMA floodplain. The 500-year is the light blue section. That is a 0.2% annual chance of a 500-year event. The AE flood zone or the 100-year, you see about 50% of Lot 5 is in that. It's very restrictive to build in. Anybody that put a structure in there or a home would require to have flood insurance. So that repurposing that or rezoning that to RV or some other purpose would be the best interest. This is a picture of from 1976 of the flood. You can see the community center is not there, but you can see that the section where these homes are going to be at below the water is not underwater. This shows where that's at today. The budget impact. Improvements made for the utility infrastructure have been added with no additional cost to surrounding landowners due to the TIF creation and their funds. Growth in households will increase municipal utility revenue and sales tax revenue. Anticipated revenues are $4,140 in property tax once the TIF is repaid, $3,204 in citywide sales tax collection, $1,708 in wastewater revenue above the added costs, $808 of water revenue above added costs, and $348 in sanitation revenue above added costs. Budget impact for 6th Street, the road surface and utility infrastructure improvements have provided upgraded services. Undeveloped lots now have services. The city will collect revenue via Sturgis Economic Development Corp as a result of the surplus of Lot 5 and from the sale of 4 workforce homes. Staff recommends staff recommendations are the Planning Commission voted to recommend approval. The rezoning is necessary step that will allow a new housing project to conform to the surrounding area. The project is part of the capital improvement project to provide additional workforce housing. Staff recommends the approval of the zoning amendment. Any questions?
No questions for Dave from council at this point, it appears. About public input on this matter. Come on up, Brenda.
Good evening. I'm Brenda Vosnitz. I'm in Ward 1. I reside at 1510 Jackson Street. And after attending the planning and zoning meeting regarding the proposed zoning amendment and surplus of land, I'd like to share with you some concerns. The one favorable property owner, Sturgis RV Campground, which resulted in the approval of 55%, by voting in favor of the zoning amendment, was offered to purchase Lot 5 and would receive said property by voting in favor of the zoning amendment. When the other landowners were only contacted by city staff with a letter notification. It is apparent city staff had discussions with the landowner prior to receiving the official notice that we all received. We believe they would have voted differently if they had not received an offer to gain tangible property. The open green space that existed was far more valuable to their business as their customers benefited from the park area adjacent to the campground property. City staff states that the 6th Street road surface and utility infrastructure improvements have provided upgraded services to the surrounding landowners, including an undeveloped lot adjacent to the project that previously did not have these services. But this does not include the landowners on Jackson Street. I believe the only reason upgraded water lines were provided to two existing residents is because of this development for the four lower income residential properties. This is an additional expense to taxpayers, which was very costly. The storm sewer is another item claimed to benefit the residents. The storm sewer on 6th Street has been ignored for over 30 plus years. When the previous city manager facilitated a paving district project for the north side of Sturgis, this should have been addressed then and included in that project. I have lived at my residence for over 45 years. The landowners impacted by this development were told for years that the open green space that we feel enhanced the value of our property and quality of life could never be developed for housing. We are not sure what has changed and why we didn't receive the opportunity to purchase this land like the campground owners have. This is the first residential housing development the city has facilitated. And then I was told it was because other developers will not build homes valued under $200,000. So that tells me that it is obviously not a good business investment or a decision. And I've watched the claims come through and that have been approved on this entire project. And I estimate the project is well over $1.2 million. And there will continue to be additional expenses with the construction of the garages that are going to go with these homes, and yet the work to be done on and completed on 6th Street. And I can't even begin to wrap my head around how the city will ever, or the taxpayers will ever, get a return on their investment with this project. To show any consideration for the future residents purchasing these four new homes, and for us that live here year-round, the ones who purchased our homes because of the open green space, we ask you, please do not surplus Lot 5 to the campground. Please keep it open green space for kids and a pedestrian access to the bike path and to downtown. Please also consider an access road on this lot to our properties. This has been taken away from us on Hope Street. We have no outlet, and during this project, without notice, we were landlocked several days with no consideration or solution. This project started without proper notice, contrary to the landowners impacted by this, contrary to what is claimed. It is obvious we know the outcome of the council's vote tonight on the zoning amendment. as too much money has been invested in this housing project, and as it sits right now, it is invaluable of the beauty and quality of life it had brought the residents that live in the north side of town for many years. It's really a huge mess. And I know, and I want to thank Rhea and Ron and Steve for going up there and looking at the condition of that road and what we've had to live with for over 6 months now. 6th Street and Jackson Street need finished immediately. We are very concerned when the street is raised 2 feet to meet the storm sewer, how it will affect the existing driveways on 6th Street and tie into the alley and the residential driveways there. So please, I ask that you will have city staff contact us prior to construction so we have a clear understanding before construction begins. Like I said before, the only notification, we never got verbal, as did another landowner. It just, construction started, and that's how we knew it was happening, other than the notification letter that we recently received in March. There are 2 fire hydrants that have also been installed and positioned directly behind residential driveways, which I believe is a liability risk to the city. These need to be relocated and positioned on the property lines so no one damages their vehicles. The pruning and cleaning up of damaged trees also needs to be done. New trees should be planted to replace the ones that were removed. Many residents utilize this green space, not just the ones directly impacted by this project. Rally attendees and campers staying at the campground used it. A lot of the residents just that live in the north part of Sturgis utilized it frequently. Please consider a pedestrian bridge across the creek, similar to the S-curves, so we can easily access the new 6th Street Park area. I know this has been a topic of discussion in the past. I was going to look into the comprehensive plan to see if that was part of it, but I didn't have time to do that. But I know it is something that had been discussed in prior years. There are not sufficient sidewalks in the north side of town, and the streets are narrow in the north part there. When the kids get out of school and they're walking home from the school bus, I mean, they're just scattered everywhere because there's so many of them, and there are no sidewalks. There is no safe place for them to walk. So please provide them and the pedestrians a safe access to the downtown business district and the new park facility. I just want to thank you for your time and consideration of the residents living and that have invested in the north part of our community. Thank you.
Thanks, Brenda. How about other public input on this proposed rezoning? Come on up, Bonnie.
I want to support Brenda in her concerns. I think she's spot on in every regard. I want to point out some concerns in the Planning Commission minutes on the agenda item of the zoning amendment, and where it talks about, it's a long sentence. I don't want to go through the whole thing, but basically it says, businesses would like to move to Sturgis but cannot bring workers due to the lack of workforce housing, and that it was a significant concern for the city. And, you know, as I read this, my contemplative side says, I'd like to know what the definition of the city is, because I think there's been a lot of objection to a number of things that have gone on lately, but particularly to this project. Are not the citizens of Sturgis the city? And when is their voice going to be heard? I think that's the heart of what needs to be said here, is when do we listen to us and the losses? I've lived here a long time. I've seen that ground underwater. It's going to be really sad when people who haven't lived here that long put their homes and their belongings there. only to lose them to the hardship of flooding. And been through that, too, because my mom lived in the floodplain, and so we went through that at a bad time. But it doesn't take a 100-year flood to put water up and over, and I know it's been engineered and it's been lifted and whatever else has been done, but that creek runs a different path when it's angry. And I think we're setting some people up for life-altering disappointment. But I think we have to remember that the people of this town are the city. And I am trying to understand, and I appreciate the efforts that have been made, and Dan, in managing our city, has brought to us a lot of funds, a lot of ideas, a lot of thinking that has been good and positive for us. But sometimes we tend to forget who we are and what we care about. And there are other projects that are on deck and in the future that bring to me these same concerns. But I hear Brenda, and I'm sorry for her losses, because they're real. My other question is about the bike path. Where's the bike path going to go, and who's paying for it? I mean, that was a lot of hard fundraising that got that started, and I don't know what's to become of the bike path. Where's it going to go?
It just won't cross over Woodland Drive back and forth like it does currently. It'll be between the road and the creek.
Stay on the south side of the creek.
Correct.
It's already done.
Okay. Yeah.
And that's included in the TIF.
I've been gone for a while. Haven't been looking at things, but okay. I just was wondering about that, where that was going to relocate to. And when I drove by the other day, it looked like there is digging going on those lots, like foundations being dug. Mm-hmm. So are those lots already sold? So we're putting in foundations? So it has to be a governor's house that goes on there?
The city is serving as a developer of this project.
For years, we had access straight through the campground until the campground was developed. That took you down 2nd Street, I believe, actually. And then Hope Street, which is a dedicated street that has been chosen to be blocked off. I just think instead of gifting it to the campground, it would have more value to the people that live in that area, even the campground, I would assume, to have at least a pedestrian walk like you do up at the development on the south side of town for the trails. And I know they put in a pedestrian access to get to the trails. That's one thing, you know, we've lost to get to our bike path, to get to the new 6th Street Park. It pushes everybody out on 7th Street, and there isn't good sidewalks. There isn't good, safe areas to get down there. And we are locked in. I mean, there was 2 days at least that no communication, no way to get out. Several of us had to move those barricades just so we could get to where we were obligated to be. And nobody was working together to solve that problem. The neighbors at the big stone house across, they have a driveway, and they were very irritable when people have very low cars. You can't really, unless you had a four-wheel drive, get up to the top part of Hope Street around that barricade because it was secure with a concrete block. But there's elderly people in that neighborhood, and it isn't, I mean, we've had access in and out. We're not, now we're, with the discussions that took place about a month ago at Dwight, now you're totally going to remove Hope Street and put a cul-de-sac in there, but there's still no proper egress out of that area. So, but there, it is doable. I mean, it doesn't have to be a paved road, it's part of the alley is going to turn into, you know, an alley graveled. It could at least be that access.
Question, Brenda. I don't know how many kids are in that neighborhood anymore. Young'uns, let's say 17 and 16 and below. But even like for yourself, if you had to walk down to the post office, what is the only route that you have to get there?
We take 7th Street.
But there's no sidewalks down 7th Street at this point in time, and it's got a lot of traffic on it. If you really wanted to be safe, you'd have to go to the 9th Street Bridge, which isn't complete yet, but there's going to be sidewalks across there.
That makes my point exactly. We have no walkway across the 6/7th Street culverts. We have no sidewalks up or down 7th Street itself. And there's really no access, safe biking access or walking access from the bike path on the north side of the creek to the adjoining bike path on the south side of the creek. They've got to cross that bridge. Every person that walks, runs, bikes, or just normal pedestrians have to go through an unsafe zone to get there.
There will be good access on the 9th Street Bridge, but then you're looking at four more blocks, you know.
It's a lot more.
It is amazing. There's a lot of people, even from Butte Ridge and so forth, they would walk down those streets, and even those streets up there are not wide by any means, and there's not sidewalks. Just to come down the little hill, you know, on lot one right there, to access the little park or the bike path, or to sled on that hill, there's a little creek crossing that the city puts in for rally time, but that's where prior years we had discussed like a pedestrian crossing, something more permanent, so the city shop guys wouldn't have to keep rebuilding it, which it gets washed out after 3 days of rally anyway. So, but that would lead everybody right to the new park area on 6th Street that you've enhanced.
And Brenda, where was the fire hydrants that you said on? Are they on the north side, or are they down on the?
They're on the south side, but they're directly behind Ron's home, which is the White House.
So they're on the north side of the lots, is what you're saying then?
Correct. Proposed lots. There, yes.
Okay. And there was no fire hydrants before.
No, there's two new ones. Yep.
And one thing I just want, I mean, let your homeowner's insurance know, too, because they cut you a break on insurance having a fire hydrant so close from your house also.
But that road is not very wide, but backing out of Ron's driveway, I mean, it's just destined to happen. You're going to hit those where they could have been planned more accordingly on the lot.
Understood, but yes, let them know, and then you can possibly get a break also.
I'd like to ask Liz a couple questions, if that's possible. Because I think it would be good if the people had somewhat of a time frame, as best you could tell them, on 6th Street in Jackson. And also maybe you could outline how you could perhaps communicate with them in the future as far as what's going to be happening there. So they've got a very good idea of exactly what the time frame will be for various things that will be happening from here on out.
Okay. As of right now, it's too wet to be out there working. One of the things that we wanted to do was the contractor is going to be pouring both the curb on 6th Street as well as the curb on Woodland Drive. And so at this point, it's better to wait until the houses are placed, because the trucks that bring them in would have to roll over the curb that would just be fresh. So at this point, that would be after the houses were placed. Since the foundations were poured, finished last week, I've sent a note to the Housing Authority. I haven't heard when they'll be scheduled to come out yet. Two of the houses are done for sure. Don't know about the other status of the other ones. So at this point, it'd probably be June, kind of late June at the latest. The contractor has until July 15th to get everything at this point without an extension. So at this point, And per the contractor, it's the contractor is the one that's supposed to be the point of contact in between the city and the residents.
All right. Go ahead, Mike.
Residents have to contact the contractors?
No, the contractors should be sending out notes and making phone calls and stuff. That's the general protocol for the city.
The city has also put on Facebook. Liz has notified us a couple times when we've had closures in the area, and we have put those on the city's Facebook page as well.
No, actually, the city's going to, you might say, make sure that the contractor, whoever, is going to go and provide that information to everybody. And you won't just assume the contractor will do that. There'll be some follow-up to make sure that occurs. Am I correct on that, Liz?
Yeah, when we had to shut the water offline and things like that.
But going forward, yes.
All right.
The other thing I was going to ask, too, as far as they were talking about pruning of trees and some things of that nature, so am I right in perhaps assuming that some of that is going to be taken care of by the city and the contractor as far as trees replaced and so forth in that general area?
At this point, the contractor wasn't required to make any tree replacements, but they have been told that they will need to prune the trees that were damaged. Two of them are gone.
I've got a couple questions. I don't know who can actually answer this, but I'll throw it out there and we'll see. I noticed there was a November 28th, 2018 town hall meeting at the community center. So I'm wondering, out of the people that are like here tonight, how many people attended that particular meeting? Just one. Two, three. So there were some people that did attend. And then just for general information, how was that town hall meeting? How was that advertised? Lisa, do you know how the word got out to the public on that?
We did send out letters to some people that we did our normal 200 feet around the area. Sent out letters and notified it. I think there was an ad on Facebook.
No, there wasn't. I couldn't find one.
Counselor Kessler and I went to that meeting, but we weren't notified of it. There was no public town hall. It was, you got an invitation from the city to the residents only. The rest of the people in that neighborhood were not informed of a town hall. It was not posted anywhere publicly. And I'd like to hear from other residents up there, because I think there's a lot more issues that I'd like to encapsulate at the end of this.
Come on up, sir.
I'm Ron Iverson. I own the property on 1514 Jackson Street. It's being used. It was bought and is being used as a vacation home rental. The first that I got any indication that this was going to happen was when I got a phone call saying that they'd busted down my fence, and they were improving 6th Street at that time. And I'm just thinking, if I'm going to do an improvement on my property that requires a zoning change, is it good that I just put the foundation in and do all that stuff and then ask for a zoning change after I've got 4 foundations in the ground and, major expenses going forward? I mean, there was no notification to the adjacent landowners that I received, because I do not live there, but they do have my mailing address on record, I'm sure. That's the point that I think is just ridiculous about this project, is that it wasn't approved. Zoning improvements or changes were not made in advance. I mean, what kind of thing is that? Just charge forward and do it with no approval. And that town hall meeting. I certainly never heard of that. And I do get the Facebook, city Facebook thing. I'm on that. I didn't see anything about it. And so that was the one thing that I was going to address specifically. But I have 4 points that I was going to touch on briefly. I believe the city of Sturgis should retain and maintain what park property we have left. Once converted to public property, it's gone as far as park property. Point three, I feel that the park property has been a valuable asset to my property. As a vacation home rental, having that park in my backyard was a wonderful asset. And the walking access to downtown, my renters love that. I love advertising in its walking distance to downtown. And that'll be gone now, because now it'll be have to walk across private property to get downtown or go around to the bridges that are mentioned and long ways out of the way. Plus, the view is gone. There's no park there anymore. Now it's going to be the backside of low-rent buildings. Hopefully we can still see over the top of them, but I don't know how tall they'll be. And then my fourth point is that I'm afraid the property value is going to be assessed higher and my taxes will go up as account of that. I'm assured that that's not going to happen, and I'll take your assurances on that, but I believe it when I see it. So those are the 4 points I had. Time.
I was just going to ask a quick question as this gentleman's coming up, and I don't know if Lisa knows the answer to this, or perhaps our mayor does, but do we have any set policy on how we send out this official notification from a standpoint of time frame or anything? Do we have anything? Is there a certain way that we do this at the present time usually?
This process is set by ordinance, if I'm correct, Dave, that you had to send it to a certain distance from the property that's being zoned.
That is correct, yes.
But I guess my question is, then, is there any time frame related to starting a project as far as when you send this out?
I believe that the time frames are related to the rezoning, but not necessarily the different time frame within the overall project.
I would think, you know, considering what's going on with this particular project, we really need to look carefully as a council as far as, you know, in the future, how we're going to approach this as far as sending out notification and the time frame as far as the timing of the project and the time of the notification. And I think we could just, looking forward, we can perhaps examine that a little closer.
I'm going to make a comment on that. I agree with Bonnie, and until the city council approves a resolution outlining the means of notification and review. Now, we all know we've got a website, and we all know that we get things in the mail and email. But official notification, as far as Facebook, no. I haven't looked at Facebook in about 6 years.
I think the official notification isn't Facebook, though. That's just it's an enhancement that the city goes an extra step to reach as many people as possible. And that was a request years ago that people said, well, can you put it on Facebook? But certainly the official notification is certainly done through registered mail and within the...
I'd just like to make a comment. We did a similar project over at the Francis Case School with the... duplexes that were there. It was a similar project. It was a similar type of situation, and we had a lot of notification. We had a lot of public input, and we spent some time with the people in public meetings with those people before we even started approaching that construction project. So, I mean, if this one seemed to have not gone the same way, we need to review that and do it the same way that we did.
Yeah, Dwight, you have some input here, sir. State your name, please.
Hey, Dwight Grippy, live at 15007 Jackson. And Dave, I'm not a gentleman. Okay. Anyway, I went to both those meetings they had. Now, I don't remember. I got a phone call from one of the other neighbors saying just a few minutes before it started. And that's how I found out about it. But anyway, I've lived up there for 44 years now. And I've seen the picture here of the flood zone. And I stated at those other two meetings, I've seen water up in that area right there three times in the 44 years I've lived there. So, in which I put out at those other meetings too. So, I mean, their picture, it was a nice picture, but it's not correct. I don't know when they took it, you know, exactly, but I know there was water up in there about three times in the 44 years I have lived there, so. Yeah, it was on there. There it is, right there. But yeah, like I said, I've seen water up in there three times in the 44 years I've lived there, so. And it took that bridge out on 7th Street a couple times, so. But that's all I got.
What is light blue again, Dave?
That's the 100 year.
That's the 500 year. The light blue is the 500 year, which by FEMA's standards is the 0.2% annual chance. They will not.
No. And their foundations were raised also.
And I'll agree with Dwight. I lived right across the street from 7th Street on Williams Street. And I do recall when that culvert, the 7th Street culvert, was washed out because there was a young lady that had driven across that in early in the morning with a child in her car, and she was stuck in the water there. However, I don't know that floodplain had been flooded. However, there's a lot of work that's been done since then to channelize the channel, and the city continues to do work in that channel to keep it open. Whereas they didn't before, so.
It has been a big improvement up there on the creek, I will admit that. Because at first, before those, where you're talking about the gal with the car, mm-hmm. Yeah, that was when they put in them small culverts. There was a bridge, wooden bridge there before that point, and that got washed out, I believe it was in 77 or something like that.
Well, the time frame I'm talking about was maybe 19.
Yeah, I remember the event where the gal got her car
or something like that.
They had too small of a, the culverts were way too small. So. Okay.
Thanks, Dwight.
I have a question about the contact with the RV park and campground. What kind of discussions, how frequently have they occurred with the owner of that property as in regards to him with a possible purchase?
I can tell you the first time I've ever talked with the owner of the campground in regards to this was today. He came into the office today and wanted to know where things were at. And we told him at this point in time, we're waiting for this to get through and that lot would not be put up for sale until after the homes were placed because we would need that for placement. That's the first time I've ever talked with him about this project.
And I'm curious why we are switching it to RV. I mean, why at this point when?
Because it's been promised.
Mr. Mayor, if I can respond. I think that the topography that Liz described on this lot one is, and as well as the floodplain, is part of the reason for treating it distinctively from the other lots. Now, I don't participate in the SEDC meetings or economic development meetings, but I believe I'm sure if Daniel were here, he'd be explaining to you better than I can that there's a legitimate interest in what's being proposed to be done in light of where the floodplain is still, according to FEMA, lies. And in light of the topography as far as trying to build access across that particular parcel back down to the some sort of access to the bike path.
I'd like to just mention that I am the city representative for the SCDC, and I have been attending SCDC meetings for quite a number of years now, and this project has not been on their agenda at all to talk about. I mean, there might have been an update about some of the work that we've done from Daniel to SCDC on this, but it's not been any agenda item that the SCDC has talked about.
Would anybody know what the purchase price, or if it was to get sold of Lot 5, would be? Has been discussed with them?
I do not. If it is going to be sold, it has to be appraised. Right. If it is going to be surplus and used as part of a economic development package, then the city has more flexibility in terms of establishing how it would be conveyed or what the requirements would be. I can't give you a more definite answer than that.
And then also, at this point, with it being in the floodplain, the highest and best, or one of the best, one of a use, if the city is going to not be in charge of maintaining it anymore, is to put it, allow it for the RV campground parking.
And that goes back to the council's goals over the years to get rid of underutilized parkland.
Right, and it's this whole thing has been to reduce the amount of area that we have to manage.
Right, and I understand that. I guess I just think that one of my points of heartburn in this is any kind of conversation that has occurred with the neighboring property owner, and it's... And the fact that, you know, we are changing the zoning to RV park, it's, you know, we're hedging our bets then. And I haven't agreed in previous transactions that have occurred when surplus property has seemingly, or whatever, in my opinion, already been told to individuals or business owners, oh, you can, you know, we're working with you on this. I take a little bit of issue when that occurs.
If I may,
Mike, can I just a minute on that? Just to Daniel said no, it was not promised. It was asked if there were owners willing to purchase the undeveloped lot. So it was not promised in this deal at all. And this was brought up several years ago to reduce the surplus, just as Liz said.
I guess one of my questions would be probably for Becca. I guess I come from a different world, but when the Army and the United States military and the U.S. government or the county, I think we got some county reps here. We got a good one here. When those entities surplus property, it goes to public auction. And how we can just give it to SEDC and recover, I don't know. So leading from there is we know to date that we're over $1.3 million worth of expense, not necessarily directly into these five lots, but because of these five lots, we enhanced other things. So I want to make myself clear that I'm not saying the entire $1.43 million plus did not go directly into here, but there's a certain amount of expense that certainly did. Now, I've also been, in my time on legal and finance and on infrastructure, I know that this property has been discussed for a better part of a year. But initially, we discussed this as lower affordable income housing. And to me, that means low income. Low income housing, by South Dakota definition, is around $140,000 to $145,000. I've also been told now that from Daniel himself that SEDC doesn't believe that these houses can come in anywhere close to that. They expect those houses to come in at more like $180,000 plus, which is not affordable housing. But if we look at it right now and we take $1.3 million, minus the income from the four lots at $180,000, that leaves us a shortfall of $580,000 of city money, of citizens' money. Now, I'm sorry, I ran out of Coke a long time ago. That being said, let me draw a definite line for you. The city is concerned about $60,000 worth of costs for ambulance to the rural population. And we have gone through 2 years of trial and error on $60,000 with the county. But now we're looking at a $580,000 deficit to the citizens of Sturgis. And we really don't think that's a big deal. So with that being said, you know, I've got concerns all the way through here.
I don't think that's a fair comparison, Mike, and let's stay on point here. Comparing that to the ambulance, it's two separate entities. This is a tool built by the state, giving us TIFs to be able to do improvements to our community. The ambulance, you're talking about people getting a free ride that don't participate in the cost. So let's just move forward from that.
But what I'm saying is we can sugarcoat this any way we want. The point is that some of this that's happened is not up to our standards as the leaders of Sturgis.
Bonnie, come on up.
Is my train of thought. I want to say at least three things. I need some clarification on what Greg said about possibilities for disposing of the property, because I didn't understand the part. I get the part of selling it, possibly. I didn't get the part of using it essentially as a pawn in economic development. I didn't understand that loop.
Historically, through the years, Bonnie, the city of Sturgis surpluses land. We surplus it to SEDC, who then sells it to people. We recoup the money from that sale. What using the Economic Development Corporation allows us to not go out and pay for an appraisal, which would cost the taxpayers $10,000, or to have the cost of an auction that could occur. So that's a tool given by the state legislature that allows us to use that as a surplus to a corporation like SEDC, and therefore they sell it, then we can recoup our money back. Okay. It's just another path of what the state gives us. Heritage Acres. It started with Heritage Acres when I first started with that path.
We did it with Francis Case. Most recently we're working on it with some land over by the Dead Man Canal and stuff like that. Yep. So.
And
because South Dakota statute, I mean, it's Chapter 6, it legislates how surplus government is, or surplus government property is disposed of.
But that moves to... When we get that kind of an explanation, there goes the transparency. Because we're talking in code from the counter, and we're sitting out here trying to understand and know what's happening with our monies and to our lives, and we don't get it. Yes, we can go find all of that, but we're not really privy to it up front, and I think we need to speak more clearly and more understandably us when we talk about those things. That sounded to me like giving it away. I don't lose my way here. I understand what you're saying, Mark, with the apples and oranges and the ambulance, but I hear where Mike was going as well, that $500,000 and $60,000, regardless, that gives me cause for concern as citizen. I mean, I'm watching both things go on, and I'm thinking, you know, it doesn't make sense to me. Again, where's my money going?
But I think it's important to keep in mind that some of the things that were programmed as part of this, like that improvement to the 6th Street Park, was part of our long-term capital improvement plan that we do set aside, or the council sets aside money every year for that. So it's not that you need to add up all of the components of this project and say we're short $500,000. I think it's you know, this was part of that program plan, this was part of that program plan. We have a TIF that's going to fund, you know, a considerable part of it as well. And then at the end of the day, when everything is looked at and these improvements are made, we are going to also see some ongoing revenue that's going to come back to the city.
And I get that. I'm just saying at the level of communication with your constituents, it would be useful if you could be a little more definitive and cue us up on some of those things as you go, ever so briefly, but remind us, because we're not on this court all the time. And that's where you draw fire as a group, as an organization, is when those things come up and they don't ring true to us and they just seem a little suspicious.
And I think that was a point of the Dave outlined the schedule that we had put through of the times that this has been talked about in the public, that this has been, you know, the council has considered this on many different levels. When we replatted the property, we had to come in and say why we're replatting it away from that part, you know, that one large piece of land and kind of what we were doing. And I think that's, you know, part of that process is, and that's the same process we use with the wildflower homes or the townhomes, you know, that process of replatting it and then rezoning it.
But when we're here at this point on this night, and we're digging foundations, and the property hasn't been rezoned yet, what would happen to me if I were out there building? I might own the property, but if it's not properly zoned and I'm doing something to it that's not right for that zone, what would happen to me if I did that? So we sit here and we look and we say, hey, we're digging foundations, and then I come to the meeting tonight and we're approving the zoning for foundations to be dug. What's up with that is the question. And there goes the credibility factor. And, you know, I started coming here a while back because I was troubled by the level of criticism that you folks get as a council. When you work hard at this, you put a lot of time into this, and there's virtually no compensation for what you do and the service you give us. And, you know, I'm upbeat. I'm positive. I'm approving. If somebody gives me a negative comment, I'm more than likely to come back with the opposite, and they don't usually come back to me again because I'm just too merry sunshine for that. But it swung both ways for me in this, what, almost 2 years that I've been here and watching and commenting. And it just makes me sad when these things happen that put it all in a fog again. You know, I've been really impressed with the work you folks do, and I've learned a lot from you and your patience and your willingness to explain those things to me. And I ask those questions, and sometimes I ask questions that I know the answer to, but I know the people behind me don't. And so I ask them for clarification and for purposes of serving others. But don't forget the commitment to transparency. Communicate with us more definitively. And for Pete's sake, explain to me how you can be digging foundations in an area that's not zoned for that purpose yet until tonight. And I'm still not clear. We're putting in the foundations and we're selling the property as the developer. Are we putting the houses on there too?
Yes.
So it'll be the whole package when somebody makes that purchase. And I have to say, when this is targeted at people with lower incomes, and yes, I mean, that's happy that you don't have to pay $1,000 a year for flood insurance on this property, but it's not going to be so happy when it gets wet and they don't have any coverage to recoup their losses.
Just to point out, kind of going back to Dave's slide, if you could put the income levels back up again, Dave. The affordable housing was identified as part of the 2014 housing study with the price point below $200,000. And then the income levels that are required by the South Dakota Housing Development Authority are those amounts there. And I think that's important to...
People at those income levels cannot afford to recoup their losses if they get wet. They need flood insurance. They should be encouraged to buy flood insurance, whether they have to buy flood insurance or not.
Part of that is going back to that FEMA map is that those have been designed and lifted, you know, as an engineering solution.
They can always buy flood insurance if they're outside the flood zone. Everyone has that.
Hitting them up. There's all I can say. We're setting them up because they're going to be first-time buyers. They're not going to know about those things. They're not going to have sufficient extra funds if it's not something that wraps into their mortgage payment.
If I may, Mr. Mayor, I do think it's, in the part of this discussion, I think it's legitimate to point out that I think you're suggesting that the FEMA map really shouldn't be, should be almost ignored. And I think there's already
been... I think
it
should be different.
Well, and you and I may agree on different areas where it might be different. The point that I want to make is that the community as a whole is affected by FEMA mapping, and FEMA mapping represents a lot of expenditure of resources at the federal and state as well as at the municipal level. And so I think it's legitimate and reasonable for the city to rely on those FEMA maps in terms of trying to utilize property as best it can. Not that they're perfect, I realize that, but nonetheless, it reflects a lot of work by people knowledgeable in the area to do the best they can to predict when those occurrences might happen.
And you actually, you know, if you go look on the FEMA map, which I did last evening, you would be surprised exactly where the water flows. And, I mean, it is really surprising when it comes to our town and how far up from Main Street and Bear Butte Creek it goes. I mean,
well, there's a reason it goes down Main Street, because that's where it started and that's where it wants to be. You know, we've pushed it away. But I understand. I just don't. I've seen a lot of water in this town go a lot of places that FEMA doesn't
for, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, Bonnie, yeah. but I've got a real pertinent question on this, because I just want to make sure where we're at with this. Am I correct in thinking that we already have a home built that is going to be delivered, or for in this case?
Ooh, yeah, for
so
sure.
We're already at that point. Am I correct? I'm just asking whoever here to answer
Liz,
that question.
Liz, can you?
Correct, yes.
All right.
We have 4 homes contracted for, 2 are complete. I have a question to the residents up north there. I sat here tonight, and I'm not going to include Terry in this. I sat here tonight as your ward representative, duly elected by you folks. I don't know how to vote on this. We have gone way too far to stop. But tonight we're gonna change zoning on 4 houses, and in zone 1 lot to an RV lot, and I don't know how to vote on this. So, I think I almost have to say yes to this, and I can't do that. So, and I don't know what the recourse is going to be. So, when the time comes, I'd like I know what my constituents want, because I know how I'd vote privately.
I believe those would all be permitted uses within that parkland. I guess I would also offer the comment that the proposal before you is to take the area, rezone it into 4-5 separate lots. You also... It is possible that you rezone the residential lots and then take another run at the other lot if that's where the area of concern is.
Thank you. That's real informative, Greg.
So I have one more question. For as far as landowner notification, When the opinions came back and it says it's based on assessed property value, is that basis commonly used? I'm sorry, I can't remember.
Yes, it is.
So that's always, our MO? Okay. All right, thank you.
I agree.
I'd like to also comment, too, because actually there's nobody sitting up here that decided when these letters were going to go out that I know of. Anybody?
No.
No. So we've sat here. I agree this should have been done in a different fashion. Absolutely. But at this point in time, what do you do? What do you do as a person sitting up here? You know, I'd like to back up, but we can't. We cannot back up. So that's where I'm at.
Well, yeah, we do.
We've said that tonight, Bonnie, that we're going to suggest we change this to make sure this doesn't happen again.
I agree. I wish we would have done this similar to the one that we did at the Francis case or some of the other projects where we had public open meetings and everyone was noticed. However, we did. There is a hiccup here, and we have to all admit that there's a hiccup that was made. We do have foundations. We have homes to be built. However, I do believe that we can at least do the zoning on those four houses and either not zone Lot 5 and leave it parkland or decide that later on.
Is that a motion, Councillor
Wadman? I would make that as a motion. I would make a motion that we do the zoning for lots 1 through 4 from parkland to residential housing of medium density.
And leave 5 alone.
And leave 5 alone.
That's current.
At this point in time.
Got a first by Ron.
Second.
A second by Dave. Last chance for comments from council. How about last chance for public for comments? Come on up, Ron. Two different contractors, though, I believe, in that situation. For
the contractor for the curb, the houses is a different contractor than the road contractor.
Yeah.
But
so, Liz, once again on that, or explain that. I guess I don't understand it fully. Are we held up a bit at Jackson or perhaps on one of those streets because we don't want to go over the curb with the houses as of yet? Am I correct on that?
On Woodland. We don't want to pour Woodland. The curb
also,
on
Liz,
Woodland. So
can we mobilize the contractor to put the curbs in up on 6th Street in Jackson and not do the Woodland?
I can talk to him. I mean, when he bid the project, he bid them all at the same price that he was going to be doing them all at the same time. But I can talk to him and see if he'd be willing to. That works for us.
Because that's what the holdup is waiting for the houses to do the curb and gutter.
And
then you can't do the paving on 6th Street until the curb and gutter's in, right?
Right. And then it's awful. It's been awful wet. And so that's been another.
I think since all the issues that the homeowners have had up there, there's probably no reason we can't get that contractor up there to be priority on that curb and gutter. Whether they bid it completely as one project or not, I think we should probably force him to get up there and get that done as soon as the weather is conducive for him.
Well, by the time they, yeah, by the time they get done
make
up
sure
there.
We get that taken care of.
All right. By the time they get done up there, they could be working down on Woodland when the houses are in. Mr. Sheeman. Looks like you have a comment, sir.
Roger Sheeman. I'm not a resident of that ward, but if I lived up there, I'd be really fired up. And you know how I'm fired up about Main Street and Sherman Street. I'd be really fired up because I went up there and looked. And the other thing I want to comment on is I've been sitting here all night listening to this, and you know me. I've come to a lot of council meetings. It seems like when anybody does anything, they have to have a plan. You have to have anything before you even move dirt. And here we got basements and everything else up there. The roads tore up, and we're sitting here tonight changing everything. I just don't see it, and I haven't seen it before. And that's my only comment. I think it was a big mistake to go the way it happened. Somebody has to be held responsible.
Thank you.
That's my comment. Thank you.
Question, Liz.
Yes.
When is it scheduled for completion?
July 15th.
July 15th, the road is.
How about the housing?
The housing, is depending on when the houses get here.
All right.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Before it work.
Yeah, so the foundations were supposed to be poured by May 24th, so they're already had just scheduled as far as that goes. So the housing, the housing authority, they have to bring the houses. They have to schedule.
So I want to ask you, when you say curb and gutter, are you talking about Woodland, or are you talking about the cul-de-sac up above there where the manhole is the big issue up there? That is one of the things that these folks are really concerned about.
The
Jackson, right?
Yeah, they're both of them. They were both included in the project. So in theory, they could go. I'll contact the contractor and ask him.
But to get the one where the manhole is sticking up there with the gravel around it. I think that really water needs valve, to be yeah. dealt with.
Yeah.
Lesson learned for council. You're not going to listen to me anyway. There's obviously no council oversight on any of this. That's what we're here for. Council needs oversight.
We have a first and a second on the floor to rezone lots 1 through 4. Last chance for comment.
Seb's comment, I guess, on there's to be like a road eventually on lot 5. I guess it would be at 1502 Jackson. And I know that roads get put in, they don't get used that often, but sometimes they do more than none. And the next thing, there's more traffic going in, their headlights shining in your something that you're not used to, I guess. Same way with on lot 4, people coming around the corner, headlights shining in there. I mean, traffic coming up and down. Right. Yeah. If there's an actual road that came in there for access and everything. I guess I understand the pedestrian use wanting to go through there. I get it. All of it, the flood map, it makes the best sense, as in making an RV, because that's something that is, we can recoup our money, I guess, a little bit is what I'm saying. And I get where you guys are coming at wanting parkland on and everything, too. I mean, I see both sides of it, but I truly wouldn't want to see an actual access road going through there, personally. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. We got a first and a second on the floor, yep. Well, all those in favor of the motion to rezone lots 1 through 4 as medium-density residential, please indicate by stating yes.
Yes.
Opposed to no?
No.
That motion carries. Thanks for all the discussion, for sure.